Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Jussie Smollett took the stand yesterday. He's up there again today in his trial. Six counts against him. Megan Crapaud, writing about it in the Chicago Tribune, just before the show today, answered a couple questions for us, like, what's Smollett's team's defense?
Well, he was adamant that this was, in fact, a real attack. He was a real victim of a genuine assault, a hate crime, a real hate crime. He was adamant that he did not participate in any kind of hoax, that he did not orchestrate anything, that he was honest with police.
And that the Ascendero brothers are the ones that attacked him.
You know, he didn't go that far. He basically said that, look, I got a good look at one of these people, then that person was running away. I saw another person running with him, didn't get a good look at that second person. I believe the defense is expected to argue that, yeah, the Ascendero brothers might have actually participated in this attack, a genuine attack, not a made-up one.
And maybe in a way, to his defense, that doesn't matter. That is, the Ascendero brothers aren't on trial here. All Jussie is saying is, I'm defending myself against the charges that I'm making this up. I'm not making this up. Somebody attacked me.
Well, what I'm saying is that the defense, I think, is expected to argue a little later on that, yeah, you saw the Ascendero brothers on video buying the rope, buying the ski masks, just buying the ski mask and buying these other supplies. I don't think they're on video buying the rope. But that could point to their genuine participation in a real assault. That doesn't necessarily mean that it was orchestrated. There's not necessarily any 100% smoking gun evidence that this was real or that this was made up, right? All of these circumstantial bits of evidence, like the surveillance, like the text messages, like the social media messages, the brothers explain it one way. Smollett is on the stand explaining it a different way, and it's going to be up to the jury to decide who is more credible.
And maybe making this more complicated than it needs to be, but both sides agree that there was some tussle, that there was some attack, fake or real, correct?
No, all that's in dispute here is whether or not the attack was fake, whether or not it was orchestrated. You know, I think there's been a lot made in the past of the fact that, you know, none of these surveillance cameras downtown that night were pointing at the actual assault. But even if they had been, that might not clear anything up, because what's really in question is whether or not the assault was pre-planned.
That's a good point, Megan. If we had video, we might, in fact, see what Jussie is describing. The question is, were they pulling their punches? Were they cooperating or not?
And that's something that the brothers have both said, that Smollett asked one brother, hey, you know, punch me, pull your punch, don't mess me up too badly. He actually, according to the brothers, asked the other brother not to punch him at all because he didn't think he could trust him to pull the punches.
Jussie said, that's preposterous. I'm a good-looking actor, and my face is important to me, and I wouldn't try to blemish the equity I have in my face here, right?
Right. I think the exact phrase he used was something along the lines of, look, this is my job. I'm not a character actor. I need to look like a black Cary Grant, not someone who got beat down.
He also said that the scene was something out of a Looney Tunes adventure. What was he talking about there?
He was describing kind of his first reaction when he saw this person, his assailant, move toward him, right, in this sort of aggressive way. I took that to mean sort of a strange and almost kind of slapstick move where all of a sudden there's a guy in the ski mask menacing towards you.
Does call up, I don't know if that was an unfortunate choice of words on his part, because the cartoon imagery is generally comical and I don't think lends to the credibility of his claim, but there it is. It looked like that to him. He also is claiming that there was a sexual relationship between him and one of the brothers, right?
That's right. It doesn't sound like an official quote-unquote relationship, but it sounds like they did kiss. There was some touching. They went to a bathhouse in Boys Town a couple of times together. Now, the brother got on the stand last week and denied any kind of dating relationship between the two. Said he didn't believe Smollett had any romantic feelings towards him. So again, it goes down to which one is more credible.
But what's the point of all of this? That is, suppose there was a friendship and there was some mutual sex, we'll call it, between the two of them, then what's Jussie's point about that?
You know, I think we're going to have to wait for closing arguments for the defense to really tie that into a bow. I don't necessarily want to connect those dots for him. I will say that they have hit hard on that one of the brothers had expressed homophobic tendencies in the past, that kind of thing. So potentially the brothers really did attack him out of some kind of homophobia. I don't know how potentially one of the brothers' possible sexual relationship with Smollett factors into that.
Yeah, it just sort of muddies the picture, it seems to me, and maybe it's all a red herring anyway. I mean, at the end of the day, it's your reporting. I guess most courtroom observers that it's going to come down to Jussie's believability versus the brothers. How did he do on the stand? How likable or believable was Jussie Smollett?
Well, I will say he was extraordinarily composed through the whole thing. I mean, he didn't rattle. I don't want to say he was, like, unemotional, right? But he definitely kept things very straightforward. On occasion, you know, when the situation was sort of called for it, he was a little bit light and kind of joking with the jury. You know, that black Cary Grant line kind of a thing. I found him to be very composed on the stand and very straightforward. There wasn't a lot of sort of getting tripped up by cross-examination. Now, we only saw about an hour of cross-examination. That's expected to continue today.
The defense also put some people on the stand who corroborated Jussie's version of the events. That is, that there were other witnesses, a security guard, somebody else at night that saw men in certain positions acting certain ways that would corroborate Jussie's version of the story. But I wonder how necessary or compelling that is in that everybody agrees that there were people there that came upon Jussie Smollett.
I think the benefit to the defense of putting that security guard on the stand was that he initially told police that one of the people in the ski mask he saw running past him appeared to be white under the ski mask. That's the same thing that Smollett told police, is that his attacker appeared white or pale-skinned. Now, of course, the prosecution is saying that it's the Oshandira brothers, who are black, who did this fake attack. So they're trying to bolster Smollett's claim there with that security guard.
Maybe it is hard to determine the race of somebody if they're wearing a ski mask at night. Is that a black person or a white person under there? Especially if you shine a light on them, maybe that illuminates the skin and in an instant changes the reflection or the true color. That was part of the testimony, right?
Right. I mean, I think also part of this is that it all kind of happened very quickly in a split second. So,
what's the reporting on this Tamara Walker, or is it Tamara Walker, who is one of the defense attorneys?
She said on Thursday last week that while attorneys and the judge were huddled in a sidebar, that the judge made a movement toward her like a lunge. When she said that in open court, obviously it raised a lot of eyebrows. The judge has strenuously denied that he made any kind of lunging or physical movement towards her. Ms. Walker spoke to me at the Tribune the next day about her side of things. And then on Monday, the prosecutors filed a request for Ms. Walker to be held in contempt of court for violating this apparently unwritten agreement that attorneys on either side of this would not speak to the media before the verdict.
Well, it is your reporting that there was an agreement that they wouldn't talk to the media. Should she have been talking to you?
I mean, the judge has been very explicit that there is no, quote-unquote, gag order, right? As far as I know, there's nothing written down. This is just sort of, I guess, for lack of a better term, a gentleman's agreement that the attorneys would not speak to the press.
Okay. Wraps up today, maybe, then, Megan?
Maybe today, maybe tomorrow. We'll see.
Personally, I hope it goes another 3 years. Just, you know, it's...
Why is that?
That was sarcasm, Your Honor. I'd like the record to show that the host was trying to be humorous.
Nice. God help us all if I'm ever a judge.
How about it? Thanks for your time, Megan. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye now.